Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com. And now you can download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning there, Marky.
Hey, Francis, how are you?
I'm grand, thank you. Actually, I want to share with our listeners. I mean, so many of our listeners are you know, from across the country now, and some international listeners as well. But we do have some local news. We have, for those of you who are listening in the area, we have in New Brunswick a new restaurant that opened up.
Yeah, cool,
just
new,
last
new
week.
Little place just opened up.
Kudos to them. There's a place called Verdigris. That opened on Church Street in downtown New Brunswick. And, you know, it's
on Liberty Street.
Liberty Street? Mm-hmm. What did I say?
Church.
Oh, I'm so bad with drunkens. It's on Liberty Street. It's right across from our restaurant. And we welcome them to the neighborhood.
Yeah,
and they're
looks
worth checking out.
I was in there the other
beautiful
night for a drink.
Place.
It's a really cool-looking place. You had dinner there the other night.
Mm-hmm.
Had some really good things to say about them. So it's fun to welcome new neighbors to the neighborhood.
Yeah, and they seem to really care. The place is obviously constructed, you know, with a lot of care. Very stylish place.
It's very stylish.
It's kind of mod.
There's no doubt about
it. Too mod for me. I'm an old man. I felt
a
little frumpy going in there.
It's got a great feel to it. And the late night bars for 23 and over, it's definitely a different crowd in New Brunswick.
Dancing late at night. The kind of restaurant that folds into lounge, which is a notoriously difficult line to walk, but I think they're really doing it in a quality way.
That's good.
You know, I think a lot of restaurants that get into trouble just like pull the disco ball down at 11 o'clock and, you know, and have a guy standing outside hawking. These guys really make a nice transition.
Francis, do you remember that in 1985 I actually worked in a restaurant where they pulled the tables away?
And the disco ball came down.
And the disco ball actually came down. Do you recall that?
Yeah, and the...
You had forgotten. I think you had forgotten, because judging by the look on his face right now of horror and distress,
and
he had actually forgotten that I worked in a place like that.
And you worked in a place like that in the middle of the slum, where the DJ booth had a glass enclosure. It was a frosted glass enclosure, and it said... What did it say?
Let us entertain you.
Oh, I knew it said something stupid.
L-E-T-T-U-C-E.
But it was not from the company.
No.
The company let us entertain you.
It was
either that or they stole it.
It was awful. I think it got bought at auction or something.
But what I got to tell you is interesting is I turned that bar around for you.
Oh, yeah.
Because Mark would work in this bar outside of downtown New Brunswick
in a challenged neighborhood.
And it was the only thing there.
Yeah, and it really was the only thing there. I mean, nothing within walking distance that you would ever go to.
And so what I did was I'd be out with my friends at 1 o'clock in the morning, and I convinced everyone that as a goof, we should go to Todd's. And it was so horrible that it was campy and everybody loved it. And
so
I would turn up every...
All the restaurant employees
I brought them there.
Are ridiculous. We're really known for being just ridiculous tippers.
Right.
And so...
And ridiculous drinkers.
You could make more in that bar from 1 a.m. to 2 a.m., than you could from 4 p.m. to 1 a.m. just because the restaurant.
I brought people there to
save
you.
Yeah. And then I bought a restaurant with you. Quit whining.
But the other thing is, when you go to a restaurant like that, you go up to the DJ and you're like, listen, we're the only ones here. You'll play this now. Or we're all leaving.
You've got to turn this off. As a matter of fact, I think that's when I stopped learning those words to music. It was right at that moment.
You've got to turn this off. Dear Lord. Okay. On to other news.
We're going to talk about food now and some interesting stuff.
Yeah,
that's good.
Anyway, welcome to Verdigris. You can check them out on Liberty Street in New Brunswick. The bar looks really cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of a loungy place to dance. It's a little more adult than a lot of places.
And an adult restaurant, too, at the same time.
And the wine list is okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's all right. I had a bottle of Chalon Pinot Gris last night, and I enjoyed my dinner. It was good. And the people are real nice, which makes all the difference in the world.
It overcomes all kinds of ills.
All right. We have this is from back in November from the science desk of the New York Times. There is a project that I've wanted to talk about since then, and I've stuck it in my briefcase, and today is the day. It turns out that oceanographers are doing a bunch of research on the ocean and using this research to help them establish targets for what the ocean should be like. Because, you know, they say that 90%, and I'm not exaggerating, 90% of the big fish are gone. They're gone.
What you're talking about there is shark and swordfish and
right.
and those big game fish that we've been
90%
hunting
of what,
at into
of what we had 150 years ago, 200 years ago, just gone, mm-hmm. fished it out.
Hunting into oblivion.
But so what? One of the things that oceanographers and conservationists have trouble doing is establishing a frame of reference to mm-hmm. see what is normal. Well, what they are doing is they're researching old menus, because it seems as though menus weren't created to be kept as archival. I mean, they were created to be mm-hmm. kept and used for a month or two and thrown away. It seems as though here this is.
I
from
I
the
thought
Times.
That was a really interesting way to go back and look at what the food of what people were eating, what was coming out of the sea, because you have it. It's written there on a menu. That someone kept and someone hung on to for a
while. In 1899, the New York Public Library received a query from Ms. Frank E. Butoff, who wanted to know if it would add a restaurant menus to its growing collections. The answer was yes. Ms. Butoff, then 49, spent 25 years visiting restaurants in the city and writing hoteliers and other correspondents abroad, eventually amassing for the New York Public Library 25,000 menus. Now those menus and thousands of others of collections around the country are being sifted by oceanographers for hints of changes in fish and shellfish population and popularity before good records were kept.
So what they're doing is they're taking these menus from around the world and deciding, well, what were the people in France eating in 1905?
In this part of France, in that part of France.
Right. What were the people in Massachusetts eating in 1905? What were the people in off the coast of Florida eating in 1905? And I think it's just a fascinating way to see what was coming out of the ocean, because you back in 1905, there was no, hey, let's get some...
let's check with the EPA and see what we pulled out last year.
Right, or let's get some Alaskan salmon and ship it over to New York City.
Right.
Okay, we weren't doing that.
Unless you wanted the salt cod could go pretty far. But they found out things like in New England and New York, menus showed how Atlantic halibut was replaced by cod, which was then replaced by haddock, which was then followed by the mix of juvenile haddock and cod called by the market name scrod. So they're tracing how different fish populations came in and went out of different fisheries, mm-hmm. and they know where the fish, what fisheries were supplying what cities, and that's really fascinating. The other thing that they can do is they provide an indirect measure of scarcity by looking at the prices adjusted for inflation.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, oysters have been a steady resource in New York and Massachusetts. Their price held constant from the 1850s to the 1950s in restaurants at 50 cents to a dollar a piece in 2004 dollars. The price doubled in the 1950s and has held steady for 40 years. And so we know that there's a constant supply of
oysters. So that oysters are doing fairly well in our area.
Abalone in San Francisco, on the other hand, began appearing in menus in the 20s. The price of an entree stayed steady through the 30s at about the equivalent of $7 in 2004 dollars. And then since the 50s, the price of abalone has shot up 7 to 10 times the rate of inflation. Abalone served in the city now comes from places as far away from Australia and is indeed a threatened species in the traditional fisheries, and I mean, that's fascinating.
It was such an interesting, and this article that was in the Times was really interesting. But it was such an interesting way to look at what we eat. The other thing they looked at how many times a certain item appeared on a menu in, let's say, New York City or in these other areas, so they could tell how, you know, who was fishing for these things and who was actually eating these things and in what types of quantity.
And it talks about how we could track the fish, but we can also track how consumer demand drives mm-hmm. pressure on a fish stock.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I love the historical part of it, and I would love to look at the preparations and all those old things. I think that
anthropologically, I'd love to get my hands on a lot of those old
food is really interesting. But you can actually, if you go to the New York Public Library, you contact the New York Public Library, and you can look in their old collection of recipes and restaurant menus. And I think that's absolutely, absolutely fabulous and interesting. So anyway, we're going to be talking with Susan Spungen about her new book, Recipes. She was with Martha Stewart for 12 years. She was the founding food editor for Martha Stewart, and now she's got her own book, and it's a cookbook. It's also a book to teach you about cooking, and I think it's pretty fascinating. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in downtown. We have a very special guest today. Susan Spungen was the founding food editor and editorial director for food at Martha Stewart Living Omnimedia for 12 years. She now has her own book, Recipes, a Collection for the Modern Cook, and she joins us today to talk about this great new book. Hi, Susan.
Hi, how are you?
Susan, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So, a book of your own.
Yes, a book of my own.
You worked with Martha Stewart, the queen of all food media, for a long time.
That's true, and thank you for remembering to put it in the past tense.
Yeah.
Sometimes people, when I've been on book tour, have you know, said, oh, she's currently there. And I'm like, no, I'm not there anymore.
Well, no, I did my homework.
Good.
And I also read your book, and I thought it was very interesting. But you've said some things because you're on a media tour of the country, right? You're, like, traveling all around.
Yeah,
I did
a lot of it in November, and I still have a couple big stops coming up.
Now, how is it?
You mean besides this one right now today?
Right.
You
know, exactly. This is the highlight. Yeah. I have this planned from the very beginning.
Now,
Susan, let me warn you. Martha and I are both from Nutley.
Oh, yeah. You're from Nutley also? Yeah.
Be careful.
What would I? I'm from Philly, so what am I going to say about New Jersey?
Yeah, I guess you got a point there, Susan.
Now, those who live in glass houses.
Yeah. Now, how is it different? I mean, you've written a lot of books under the auspices of Martha Stewart Living Omnimedia.
That's true. Usually with a bigger team, though, so I can't claim full credit for any of those. But the hors d'oeuvre book was a big opus for me, I think.
Is it a very different thing being out on your own?
Yeah, I would say it definitely is.
How?
And, well, it's just little old me now, you know, and it's, you know, I don't have this huge, you know, media machine behind me, and, you know, I don't know if I realized how big of a juggernaut it really was, mm-hmm. You know, until being out on my own and being little old me again, so.
Is it easier or harder to be out on your own? I'm a control freak, so it's easier for me to be on my own.
Yeah, in some ways it's easier, because, you know, it is just me. I don't have to, you know, I can really speak from my heart and say the things that are important to me, and I'm not, you know, I'm not speaking for the company, I like it. I mean, I don't have all the stress. I get to kind of stick to the more creative things, which is what I really enjoy doing.
Now, I have to say, I never made anything out of a Martha Stewart book.
And
I used to watch things and think, I'm not doing that. But I used to watch.
Yeah.
You know, the reason I never made any of the Martha Stewart stuff is because I don't have a glue gun.
Well, we didn't use those in cooking.
Let's hope not.
Now, spoilizing for glue.
You've been quoted as saying that one of the most pleasurable parts of a meal should be the making of it. Mm-hmm. Do you think that you, on your own, have a different approach than you did when under Martha Stewart's auspices?
Not so much. I do think that at the magazine, you know, there are a lot of different kind of forces. And as I said a couple of months ago, the New York Times, there were a lot of hoops to jump through. And, you know, I said that it's nice when the hoops are your own. So that's what I think is the difference. But, I think sometimes things had to be, you know, got maybe more complicated because, you know, it had to be something no one ever saw before or, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. we were just constantly trying to outdo ourselves in some ways and, you know, or a particular story just called for a particular kind of recipe or something like that. And I think that, you know, sometimes people got a wrong impression that everything was complicated in the magazine, and I don't think that it was. I do think sometimes we would go over the top on cake decorating or have something for a big party, but people also really love looking at that stuff.
I would be fascinated by it, but from an anthropological perspective, the idea of actually doing it never would occur to me.
Right,
you know?
But I think, unfortunately, some people maybe overlooked a lot of the more simpler things because they just, you know, people tend to get a general impression about something, and they don't realize that, you know, there's a mix of things in there.
And you can make that same cake without putting all the decorations on top and doing all the other things.
Now, let's talk about your book, Recipes. Mm-hmm. Most of the cookbooks that seem to come out today either tend to be, you know, Thomas Keller's, you know, $255 tome of all things French bistro, and very complicated and complex ways to take 9 days to make a sausage.
Yeah.
Or, you know, 15-minute meals.
Right.
Does your book fall somewhere in the middle of that?
No, I do think it does because, and it's funny that you mentioned, Bouchon, but that's not what we're here to talk about. But I remember while I was working on my book and I opened his book to look at his recipe for bœuf bourguignon. Now, you could compare his recipe for bœuf bourguignon with mine, and you will find, you know, it is so completely different. He's got draining through cheesecloth and all these, you know, cooking the vegetables separately, and I thought, that's not bœuf bourguignon. And, you know,
so yours is focused on the bœuf and the bourguignon, then.
it is, and it's, you know, it's simple, it's rustic, you know, and it's simpler than Julia Child's recipe, too, you know, and it's, I try to cut the stuff that I really don't, sometimes I think recipes take you through unnecessary steps, and if you really look at the end result, is that extra step really making that much of a difference, or, you know, searching out a particular ingredient. So I'm, you know, a purist in many ways, but I also am a realist. And I I, you know, if I can cut out a step or an ingredient, if I can take a shortcut here or there, you know, I'll do it. And I wanted to give people permission to do it, too. And as long as the end result is something to be proud of, I think you can take a shortcut here and there. There's no, you know, police out there making sure you're doing something a certain way or buying something in a certain place.
Our guest is Susan Spungen. Her book is Recipes. Susan was with Martha Stewart Living for 12 years, and she's just put her own book out there. And it's a great cookbook, and we're going to talk more about that in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1125. You know, Mark and I are always saying that long-term, good environmental policy and good economic policy are one and the same. And that's not just for the government, it's also for small business and homeowners just like you. To help us put our money where our mouth is, we called E2ECTA. E2ECTA uses a team of specialists to find practical ways for your business or home to conserve energy and even to generate green energy that the utility company then has to buy back from you. That generates a different kind of green for your bottom line. We've gone solar at our restaurants. We're now producing cheap, non-polluting electricity, and with the help of E2ECTA, we did it for very little money. The government programs available to get you set up are unbelievable. We're talking about grants here, not loans, but grants. E2ECTA will help you find the right programs for you, and they'll do the paperwork. You keep the profits. It's a no-brainer, people. For lower energy usage, more profits for yourself, call E2ECTA at 908-359-9300 or click on their link at restaurantguysradio.com. E2ECTA for total energy solutions. You're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. Our guest today is Susan Spungen, and her book is Recipes, a Collection for the Modern Cook. Susan, I read your book, and I think and how you organize it is really terrific, and I want to talk about that. It's sort of a cookbook, and it's sort of a textbook on how to cook.
Yes, you could say that.
But the title of the book is called Recipes, and you do have a lot of recipes there. How important are recipes to modern cooking? And is it your goal to teach someone how to cook well enough that they can sort of... I mean, I think that great cooks use a recipe as a base, and they sort of riff on it.
It's,
you know,
a guideline.
Whereas,
right,
I think the novice cook sort of slavishly follows the recipe. Is, right, it your goal to move people from the former to the latter?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I really, you know, you can't be all things to all people, but I was sort of trying to be. I wanted the book to not be scary and intimidating to a novice cook, and I wanted someone either with a very little, you know, either self-taught or not much cooking experience at all to perhaps learn a little bit more about classic technique and, you know, through the book. And, you know, I knew if they needed to follow slavishly, I didn't want to leave them hanging.
Mm-hmm.
Kitchen, as many books do, by skipping over important.
Well, you don't want anybody to fall off the ladder.
Exactly. So, you know, I really, you know, some of the recipes are more aimed to the novice cook, and some are, you know, more for the experienced cook. And certainly, I wanted to give the experienced cook ideas, and that's also what the pictures are for. Sometimes, you know, an experienced cook can look at the picture and say, "Oh, that's a great idea. I think I'm going to make that." And you're referring to the chapter organization, and, you know, I have it organized by technique: sauté, simmer and braise, roast, bake, what else, chop, you know, stuff like that, prepare. And, you know, that was the point of that was, yes, to give maybe, you know, sneak a little cooking lesson in there in every chapter and to give people an idea of what they're doing, because I think sometimes the recipe says, well, put this in a hot pan, cook it on each side, mm-hmm, for 2 minutes. They don't realize they're actually sautéing.
Right.
Oh, I never sautéed anything. It's like, oh, no, you have sautéed.
Sure you have. You do it every day.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people, though, what they do is they tend to fall back on the techniques. If there's one or two techniques that they're good at, mm-hmm, maybe they neglect braising, for instance, mm-hmm, because they just don't do it very often.
Right. They're just afraid to try it, and, you know, and they might not realize, well, braising is, like, a great thing to do if you're having, you know, a winter dinner party. You could do it the day before. It's completely done.
Speaking about falling back on a technique, which is why we have friends who grill and only grill,
mm-hmm,
and in the middle of winter will shovel a path to their grill in order to be able to cook, because all they can do is grill.
Actually,
more and more people are doing that.
Actually, a true story.
Our guest is Susan Spungen. Her book is Recipes, a Collection for the Modern Cook. You should pick it up, and you can find out about it by linking to our website at restaurantguysradio.com. We'll be talking more with her after the news. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1130.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com. And now you can download our podcast on iTunes.
Our guest today is Susan Spungen. She was the founding food editor and editorial director for food at Martha Stewart Living Omnimedia for 12 years. She now has her own book, Recipes, A Collection for the Modern Cook. And Susan Spungen joins us to talk about that book today. Susan, your book is, and I've never seen a cookbook organized like this. Well, I thought, and I don't think people realize this when they get it. You have this very large book, and it's really a nice reference book. Mm-hmm. It's arranged by technique. So, for instance, your techniques are, and I have just jotted them down here because I thought this was great. Prepare, chop, saute, grill, roast, bake, simmer and braise, and indulge.
Right.
And it struck me right off the bat that's like a culinary school mm-hmm. course of study.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
And I think that the average consumer who picks it up may not realize that that's what they're doing, but they could take your book in order mm-hmm. and learn how to do these things.
Yeah.
I actually prefer to go in reverse order and indulge first and then...
What's that? Eat dessert first?
Life is short.
Well, if I indulge first, I have a lot more energy to saute and chop and grill and roast.
I do think that for the home cook, one of the things that your book offers is in the chapter that you call prepare.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about some different dishes that you put in that section, like a vinaigrette and how to mm-hmm. sort of get things started. Mm-hmm. But one thing that home cooks always get that gets them into trouble, I think,
mm-hmm.
is they don't prepare everything.
Right. They're not ready.
So that's why their kitchen is a disaster, and
right.
the food all comes out at
right.
the wrong time. And
right.
whereas you know, in the professional kitchen, we call that setting your mise en place.
Right.
You know, getting
right.
everything in place.
Yep.
And this is mise en place for the home cook.
Yeah.
That's
well, you know, in a way, I think I might talk about this in the intro to my book. I worked in restaurants, a lot in the early part of my food career. And it caterers and things like that. But I never went to cooking school. I went to art school. And so, you know, I had to learn from other chefs that I worked with and also just by reading books and by being thrown into situations where I had to just perform. And so, but I always felt like a little bit of an interloper in the professional kitchen because I didn't go to the Culinary Institute and I didn't, you know, wear a little kerchief and a toque and all that kind of stuff. And I was more like a home cook kind of observing the restaurant. Thing. And then I went back to really being a home cook because being the food editor at Martha Stewart Living, it was about home cooking and our audience was home cooks. But I have this knowledge of how things are done in a professional kitchen and that helps me so much as a home cook to know to do my mise en place, to get some, if I can get something done ahead of time, I do it ahead of time. And it's not just to get the prep done ahead of time, it's to get the cleanup done mm-hmm. ahead of time. And I don't think, you know, people realize that you got to keep the whole thing running smoothly, clean as you go. You know, if everything's clean and dry, you can put it away and you can do the next thing and you don't have this huge mess on your hands. I love to be able to finish the dinner and have just the dishes to put in the dishwasher.
Yeah, that is nice. One of the things that I think we can learn from all these cooking shows and mm-hmm. is all these professional chefs, they're all set up with their parsley all chopped in a nice little ramekin
right.
ready to go.
Right.
Their vegetables are already cut up.
Mm-hmm.
So as you need things, you can reach for them
mm-hmm.
and put them right into your
yeah.
pots and not say, okay, this is going to overcook while I go back
right.
and peel
chop
this
the
carrot.
Parsley. Yeah, parsley.
Right.
It's, you know, there was an old chef that we used to work with that I thought was great, and he used to say to his line cooks, he worked for us in one of our restaurants, and he would say, you remember this, Mark? He would say, don't think, cook. You know, because if you have to look for the parsley, you're not focused
right.
on the dish. Everything's
right.
got to be there and at your hand. You don't even think about it, and you go. You know what I do, though?
What?
I hire someone to come and clean my house the next day.
You do have to think ahead.
Yeah. See,
I would change what he says to say, think ahead.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah, uh-huh.
I have a little sidebar in the book called Making Lists, you know, and that's, you know, it's just, I say even if you're, you know, even if you take the time to make the list, you don't even look at the list again. You've sort of in your mind,
right.
you've organized yourself, and you might not actually need to look at the list again, but you thought it through, and you thought, oh, I need to, you know, do this or that. I was talking about really when you're having a bigger party.
Sounds like my college career.
Yeah.
Take the notes and never look at them again.
Well, and Mark just barely graduated school. We hope that the dinner.
Stop it.
Hey, I'm a college dropout.
Stop
I'm proud
it.
Of it.
All right.
Hasn't held me back at
you
all.
You know what Mark always says to me? He says, you know, because I was a study head, you know, and I graduated with a high grade point average. And he says, yeah, all those times when I was going to the kegger and you were going to the library. Where is your desk again? It's right, of course, next to Mark's, and we do the exact same thing for a living. And we're 50-50 partners. Anyway, your next chapter, I think, is really interesting to cover in a book, and one of the things that I think is hardest for a home cook to develop if they don't work in a professional kitchen or work with someone who has them. But your section called Chop.
Mm-hmm.
How does a home cook develop knife skills?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, having good knives.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
I think a lot of people are afraid of even an 8-inch knife, which I recommend as, you know, your basic all-around kitchen knife. And, you know, when, it's funny, when I worked in restaurants, a 10-inch knife, and somebody asked me this along the tour, but, you know, a 10-inch knife doesn't really work at home. You have smaller counters, smaller cutting boards, and I think a 10-inch knife is a little unwieldy for the home cook. So, you know, an 8-inch chef's knife is your basic knife, and then a paring knife and a bread knife is your most basic set. And I think, you know, people need to invest in those couple of knives to start with. You can then add a boning knife and a flexible slicing knife after that. But a lot of people, they're afraid of knives, and
mm-hmm.
they think they, you know, I've seen people, like, try to cut everything with, like, this funny little paring knife or one of the two-sided bread knives that you get on TV. And
oh,
it's
yeah.
like, you know, they just, like, struggle with these things, and you're much more likely to cut yourself with mm-hmm. a bad knife. We all know that. And, you know,
actually,
so,
you know what? I think that you raise a very good point that people don't realize, is that you're much more likely to get hurt with a bad knife or with
sure,
a knife that's not
it
sharp.
It bounces right. off of something instead of gliding through it.
Right.
And you don't
so
control
you
it.
You just need to, like, get good knives, keep them in good shape, yeah. and just learn the basics of using them. And, of course, safety is the first thing. You know, and learning to curl your fingers under. You don't have mm-hmm. to be a whiz. Hey, I am not like the chef that can slice an onion in like 3 seconds. I'm good, but I'm not that good. You
mm-hmm.
know, I'm still a home cook. I never had that degree of practice. I'm not like a baton twirler with my knife, but I'm good and I'm fast and I'm safe. And that's I think all you need to do.
When I go into someone's home, generally my brother or somebody like that, and they ask me to carve something or cut something or
mm-hmm.
chop something,
mm-hmm.
Invariably, I have the problem that they may have some really good knives,
mm-hmm.
but they haven't kept them sharp
right.
or straight.
That's true.
And those little straighteners that come in that little wooden block that,
yeah.
that you have, if
yeah.
just use those. Just use that every time you cut. You use
right.
your knives, and you can keep your knives sharp, straight. You don't need to sharpen them that much,
right.
and it makes all the difference in the
right.
world to what you're cutting.
Right, and two other things that people do at home that kill me. Only use knives for food. Yeah, you know, don't open a box or open a can with the tip of your knife.
It's not a screwdriver.
No,
it's a knife.
And a lot of, you know, I see so many knives with broken tips when you're in people's
mm-hmm.
homes, and it's like, it's just, you know, don't use my bread knife to open a cardboard box. You know,
right.
if I see somebody
right.
doing that, it's like, no.
Would you cut a tomato with an X-Acto? No.
Yeah, exactly. Don't do it. You know, just keep your knives for food. It will keep them sharp and, oh, and what was the other thing? I forgot. I forgot what I was going to say, but it'll come back to me.
Well, I find that knives are really interesting, and people can sort of get obsessive about knives. And when you work in a professional kitchen, many of the chefs, most of the real good cooks and chefs, will have their own knives.
Right. Of course.
And the way to lose a hand. Uh-huh. Is either to work with an unsharp knife or to grab somebody's knife without permission.
Absolutely. But the other thing I was going to remember to say is don't put them in the dishwasher.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Get that
so,
out of
you know,
there.
It takes 2 seconds to clean a knife. You know, it doesn't take that long. And, in fact, you know, you could – what I do, you know, those little stainless steel garlic things that they sell to get
yeah.
the garlic
mm-hmm.
off your hands. Well, I just – you know, maybe it's not the safest thing, but I do it all at once by – I wash my knife by hand, and I just use that as my stainless steel to get the garlic smell off my
mm-hmm.
fingers.
Yeah, we're not going to recommend that
just,
to our
just
to
one
our
other.
don't do that at home. Please don't do that at home.
Only
and
on
sue
my
her if you do that and get hurt.
Be really careful.
Yeah, just one other quick tip about knives. Those wooden blocks that you get, they're really not the best way to store your knives. If you can get one of those magnetic things
right.
that hang on the wall,
yeah.
Those are a much better way to store
them.
Yeah, but keep your credit cards away from them. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking with Susan Spungen about her book, Recipes, A Collection for the Modern Cook. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45. Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and also of the Restaurant Guys radio show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to RestaurantGuysRadio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys. Mark Pascal and Francis shot a stage left and captain of the morning restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest today is Susan Spungen. Susan worked with Martha Stewart. She was the founding food editor and editorial director for food at Martha Stewart Living Omnimedia for 12 years, and now she's got her own book out called Recipes, a Collection for the Modern Cook. It's a great book, and one of the things that's really nice about it, that I like about it, is it's organized a little differently than most cookbooks. There are many, many recipes for you to use and to sort of slavishly follow, but if you go through the book in order, it's basically a little tutorial on how to cook. We start with how to prepare, how to chop, how to saute, grill, roast, and bake, and in each one of these categories, there's a little lesson there. Do you deal at all with, we were talking a little bit before the break about how people need to sort of equip themselves to basically be able to cook at home. Mm-hmm. And we talked about having good knives. What else do you recommend people have at
home?
Well,
I feel like the things that I use the most that I can't live without are, definitely a really good nonstick sauté pan, usually, 8 inches, it's probably 10 inches, actually, that I like, with an oven-proof handle, so that you can take things from the stovetop into the oven at any temperature. I mean, a plastic handle, most people don't know, it can go in the oven up to 350, but, you got to cook like a chef, really. You need to be able to start something on top of the stove and then throw it in the oven.
That's what I was just about to say.
That's
a technique you see every single professional chef do, and you see almost no home cooked.
Right, and and most of the cheaper cookware has plastic handles, and those are safe up to 350. But you might be, if you want to pan sear a piece of fish or something like that, you need to be able to get it into the oven to cook through. It just cooks things more evenly. You're just trying to sear something on the outside and then put it in the oven to finish cooking, and it's just a really good technique. That's why chefs use it. And so I really recommend cookware with oven-proof handles, and definitely to have at least one nonstick, and one that's uncoated is fine, too. I also think a braising pot, like a Le Creuset kind of braising pot, a Dutch oven, everybody needs to have one of those, and a lot of people don't. I think you need to have a very good roasting pan, a heavy-duty roasting pan, along with a rack. And this is all off the top of my head. I have a much more detailed list in the book. A mandolin. I love mandolins. You got to have a mandolin. You got to have a microplane grater. These are the things I use the most.
Mandolin's a little machine that helps you. It's a little sort of blade on an angle that lets you slice cucumbers.
It was one of those things that was on late night TV that was actually worth buying.
Yeah, exactly.
And actually, I like the newest, cheapest, smallest ones, which are the ceramic blade ones, that aren't adjustable, and it doesn't do julienne or anything like that. The old French mandolins are really kind of expensive and unwieldy, and you can't really sharpen them and stuff like that. But the ceramic blade ones, I just slice things thin, like fennel and apples and celery and Parmesan cheese, and it just makes those paper-thin slices that are just great for salads.
That is the one piece of equipment in the kitchen that I recommend you be extraordinarily careful with.
That's true. Always use the guard.
Yeah, you'll slice your finger
off. Don't trim the vegetables. That's my other trick with mandolins. Like if I'm doing a head of fennel, I don't trim it first. I hold on to that big stalk at the top.
Right,
so that my fingers never have to go anywhere near the blade. And if I'm using something smaller, I always use the guard, because actually I have cut myself. I was doing television once with Martha, and I actually cut myself because, you know, when you're just in the kitchen, you're quite focused on safety, but when you're looking at TV cameras and worrying about the way you're looking, and you're looking at the camera and looking at the, you know, talking and doing, so I did cut myself at one time on mandolin.
I need to know what you do when you're bleeding on TV.
It wasn't fun, let me tell you. I had to keep stopping to changing the bandage.
Were you live?
No, we weren't live, but Martha had to catch a plane, so.
Oh, man.
We had to get through it. And, you know, the funny thing is, it's one of my best segments ever.
Well, you said focused, you know, you got to be focused.
You would never know if you watched the segment that I was, like, bleeding to death.
You need to send me that segment, Susan.
I will.
You know what's amazing is when you talk to people who are real professional chefs in a kitchen or cooks in a kitchen for a long time, you know, people get hurt.
Yes.
People get hurt. Sure. And what I think is interesting is in the restaurant business, people get burned all the time.
Yeah.
And you know what they do?
What?
They keep cooking.
They keep cooking.
You just keep cooking. And I have friends who work in other fields, and they're like, oh, I got a boo-boo. I got the rest of the day off.
I mean, for all the years I worked in kitchens, I didn't hurt myself too much, and I definitely burnt myself more than I cut myself.
Mm.
But, you know, you do have to be careful, and I have quite a few scars on my arms and hands. And
those are badges of honor.
They are.
War wounds.
You know, yeah. You mentioned Le Creuset cookware, and Le Creuset cookware is an enamel-baked cast iron product. Very heavy,
and
very
clearly
weighty.
The best in the industry. I mean, just really good, great pans.
I cook with cast iron all the time at home. I mean, we don't use cast iron at all in the restaurant. It's not, you don't usually see it in restaurants.
Right.
I adore cooking with cast iron.
Right, I left out a cast iron skillet, of course.
Well, the thing about cast iron is if you don't cook a lot and you don't have the pan seasoned, you know, if you don't cook a lot, you're going to have trouble. I
mean, nobody wants to cook in a rusty pan.
But now you can get the Lodge has a pre-seasoned cast iron, which is ready to go.
Yeah.
And it's much, much better. You don't have to wait, like, 12, you know, years.
Right, until it starts making good food. You don't have to ruin 70 meals in order to make your next 200 meals.
I have one of my grandmother's cast iron skillets, and I love it. It's, like, so smooth and black. It's perfect. But it really does take years to get it that way. So.
Yeah, well, and what I like about the La Crusade stuff is that has a lot of the same properties as cast iron.
Yeah.
But because it's baked in enamel, it is also a nonstick surface.
Right.
Hey, listen, Susan, we want to thank you for taking the time into your schedule to come talk with us about your book. It's great.
Thank you.
And we're going to send people to your site that they can find out how to buy it.
Recipes, a collection for the modern cook.
Extraordinary. Susan, thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Susan.
Bye-bye.
That was Susan Spungen. She was with Martha Stewart Living Omnimedia for 12 years. She was the founding food editor and the editorial director for food. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hey, you're back at The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis. And our guest today was Susan Spungen. Her book, Recipes, a Collection for the Modern Cook, is a great cookbook. You know, I was reminded as I read through Susan's book and as we talked to her on the show today of the first American cookbook. Do you remember the first American cookbook?
I do,
cookbook?
As a matter of fact.
First American cookbook was written by a truly American, where she used American ingredients and things of the sort, was written by a woman named Amelia Simmons in 1796.
Yep.
And we know that because our friend David Page and Barbara Shin, who own Home Restaurant and Shin Vineyards on Long Island, brought this to our attention because they were doing a 200th anniversary celebration of the Amelia Simmons cookbook. And we shamelessly copied them. With their permission,
in 96, we did. We brought back a lot of her recipes and a lot of, you know, obviously we had to upgrade them because turtles are not as readily available as they used to be.
Yeah.
So we brought that book and those recipes back and did a lot of those interesting recipes back in 96.
And we did a big celebration on the 200th anniversary of the publication of the first American cookbook. But what I find very interesting is we had to do a lot of research with our chef at the time, because cookbooks today, was it Betty Crocker? No, who was the cookbook author? I think it was Betty Crocker. We'll have to look that up. But prior to her, the standardized measurement in a cookbook, there was no standardized measurement. Mm-hmm. And so when you would read that cookbook, it would say a pinch of this, a handful of that,
right,
a dash
some,
of this,
right,
a wine glass of this, you know, and it if you didn't already know how to cook, the book was useless to you. And but the turtles also made a little Easter sauce. And the terrapin and the hares were not so popular. But it was a very interesting book, and actually I think you can find it online. It's a very short book, and historically it's very interesting. She was the first to use pumpkins in a cookbook, which, you know, you didn't see prior to that. And I think that was very fascinating. So the credit to that goes to David Page and Barbara Shin from Home Restaurant. But that was really a lot of fun.
And Amelia Simmons was the author.
But believe me, you would rather be looking through Susan Spungen's book than Amelia Simmons' book. It's if you're trying to actually make something from it, not as an intellectual exercise.
Piece of history.
Anthropological exercise. Well, I hope you've enjoyed the hour talking to the Restaurant Guys. I am Francis Schott.
And I am Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12.